This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk with Bob Heineth, the leader of a campaign to halt an exclusive housing development that he says has been rubber-stamped without proper environmental review by county officials at the Discovery Bay Golf Course. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Why don't you start off by telling me what the Discovery Bay Action Alliance is and why it exists?
Sure. We're a group that's come together, rural residents that live on the different borders of the golf course. Many of us have lived here for more than a decade. And we're concerned about what's happening in the county in terms of development. And that we don't believe that the county departments are doing their job, what they need to do, and that the county's basically unprepared to deal with the onslaught of growth and how they're dealing with land management. So this particular instance is a proposal to put in 48 houses on about 46 acres of land that surrounds the 18 holes of the Discovery Bay Golf Course. And this proposal went through very, very quickly. I think this is the third time it's actually been proposed. There's a history behind it. But in 2019, the developer, it's a LLC called We4, they came forth with a permit application, and they approached the county, and the county said, well, you have to do this SEPA, State Environmental Policy Act checklist. And this checklist is something that, in my experience, an entity would submit to Department of Ecology or some other governmental entity in terms of putting in a culvert or maybe a single lot or something like that. But this development is much, much larger than that and really deserved an environmental impact statement, which would require the county to do a much more thorough assessment of the proposal and actually look at some different alternatives than the one they came up with. So that was our initial issue with it, and that the county, we don't believe, has been very transparent about it. They never held any public meetings about it or anything like that. On the draft SEPA checklist, there was over 60 comments by citizens, concerned, most of them based on concerns. But because the county decided to do the SEPA checklist, they didn't have to respond at all specifically to these comments.
So they didn't have to react or give any sort of...
No, not at all. And all they did was they took the categories of issues that people commented on, and then they made a pie chart. And they said, okay, these people, XYZ, have the comments on the wetlands or the forestry or traffic safety or whatever. And that's what they did. And they never responded specifically. And there were a lot of great comments, very specific comments about issues about stormwater, forest land, wetlands, pollution, the Larry Scott Trail, conflicts with that, conflicts with Jefferson County Airport. Traffic safety issues, just a number of different issues, but there was never any discussion with the community. The department, community development, just went ahead and issued this thing, and it was very short notice. The permit was sent in to be evaluated right before the pandemic, and the pandemic came along, and we didn't hear anything for about a year, and then the end of February.
Was the pandemic one of the reasons that they didn't hold hearings because they just weren't having public meetings or?
They never say anything about it. I mean, they certainly could have done a Zoom meeting, and I'm sure there would be a lot of people weighing in on it, because when we had pre-hearing conference meetings, there was 40, 50 people on the Zoom meeting wanting to make comments about it. So anyway, the county went ahead and approved the permit the end of February. And I think I got the notice maybe 10 days before the actual hearing to approve the permit was to be held with what's called a hearings examiner. The way it's done in Washington State is instead of county commissioners or planning commission making a decision on a permit, the county pays for an independent hearings examiner, usually an attorney from outside the area, in this case Tacoma, to come in and hear the case for and against the permit and make a decision. And that's what we're going to be going into next week. There's actually two hearings. The first one is on the environmental issues, and that's going to be a long hearing, a lot of expert witnesses on both sides testifying. And then on the 23rd, the following Monday, August 23rd, there's going to be an all-day public hearing where people from the public are going to be able to weigh in and give oral and written testimony. And that is specifically on what's called the plat determination, because in order to move forward with development, the developer needs to take a number of different existing lots and subdivide them to make the 48 lots. So this is a very, very complex issue. And we believe there's a lot at stake, and that's why we came together as the Alliance. We hired Brinklin and Associates to help us on the legal aspect. We've hired a number of different expert witnesses. We've engaged in a major fundraising campaign. We're still not there in terms of what
how much money are you trying to raise?
Well, I think we've raised around $20,000 right now, and we're probably going to need about $45,000, maybe even $50,000. And part of that is that we have to, as citizens, reimburse the county for defending themselves on this permit.
Really?
And we don't know how much that's going to be. It could very much be thousands of dollars. And we have no recourse or leverage, really, to negotiate with the county, except if enough people weigh in from the public and say, you know, this isn't fair. Why are you making citizens pay to do the job you should have done right in the first place?
I've been looking at your website a little bit, and there's several things that really perplex me. I understand that the development lot minimum size is 5 acres, and yet these lots are all like 2 acres and under, some of them under an acre, right?
Correct.
So,
correct. Well, it goes back to a problem actually with the code, because the code says what you have to have is open space if you're going to mitigate for a lot smaller than 5 acres. And for example, we have two HOAs, homeowners associations, where folks have come together and they have lots no less than 2 acres in size. But what they've done is left undisturbed forest as mitigation land. So say an owner of a 2 acre lot, they basically have pooled together with others to provide 3 acres in mitigation for that 2 acre lot. But that's, we don't really know what's happening with this, because there's no mention of an HOA at all in this thing. And they're using this issue of open space. They're saying the golf course qualifies as mitigation open space, even though it's highly disturbed land. So it's just a matter of what the county is declaring is open space. And we're saying, you know, it should be undisturbed forest land or wetland, and you shouldn't be cutting down what's left and saying that the golf course is open space mitigation for that.
Well, and in addition to that, the math doesn't pencil out either. I mean, I understand that there should be some 245 acres instead of 200 acres with the number of buildings they're proposing to put on. So that sounds like it doesn't.
Right, right. Yeah. So the other issue, which is the plat issue, is the county's awarded the developer what's called bonus density. And so the county's saying, well, the developer is going to go in and they're going to plant native after, you know, the trees are cut down, they're going to come in and plant native vegetation, and therefore they get an additional award of bonus density. And we just don't think that's kosher at all.
I'm sorry, when did you form your alliance?
We came together very, very quickly, basically over a weekend, because we didn't have much time to react to this. And we decided, but a bunch of folks got together on Zoom, and we queried ourselves, are we gonna go ahead and appeal this thing? And we decided we were gonna do it. And so we spent the weekend putting together the appeal. We very quickly were able to get Brinkland Associates on board to review our appeal. And then it was due, our appeal was due Monday at 5 o'clock to the Department of Community Development Office. And so I literally got that thing delivered about 10 minutes to five. I knocked on their door because they were closed, and someone came and I said, please give this to Joel Peterson, and it was our appeal. And I also had to enclose a $2,500 check. And that was initially to provide the county staff to begin to react to and defend themselves against our appeal. So we already have $2,500 into the county. We don't know how much more we're going to have to pay them.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the anticipated environmental impacts and where you get the information.
Sure. Let's start with traffic safety. That's a very, very big one. We were able to get a hold of a letter from the County Department of Public Works back in 1997 when this proposal first came to light, you know, development around the golf course with housing. And in that letter, it clearly says that this project should not go ahead. It's a significant impact. The roads are too narrow. There's no shoulders. It's a traffic safety issue. So we started off with that. And then the applicant did some analysis based on a 2005 traffic study. And then recently they tried to update some of that. But the roads are way too narrow, and they're talking about putting in two entrances to the development for emergency vehicles and so forth. One of them would be going in about 75 or 100 feet up Cape George Road from the existing golf course club entrance. And we've looked at that. It's really, really dangerous. I mean, cars come down Cape George Road in excess of 50 miles an hour. There's a hump in the road there, so you really can't see clearly what you're getting into.
Isn't the speed limit like 35 in there, though?
It's 40.
Oh, is it 40?
But, you know, it's very, very steep, right. And yeah. And people all the time go very, very quickly down that road. So that's a very dangerous situation, we believe. And it's hard to believe that the county didn't really take a hard look at that based on what they said before in 97. And really nothing has changed in the roads here since 1997. So we scratch our head and say, well, you know, why is the county making a separate determination on this? And I guess in my mind, if this development or some development happens, they should be using the existing entrance to the golf course. It's flat there. It's very visible. There's adequate parking, because they're also talking about extending a Larry Scott Trail, which would be adjacent to that entrance, with a parking lot. And there's going to be a lot of traffic there. So that's one issue there. And then on the other side, they're proposing to put in another entrance just down from Douglas Way. And we're concerned that they're not putting in a, you know, wide enough entrance into it. And there definitely will be congestion on that side of it as well. So traffic safety is a considerable concern. I think for a lot of people commented on it, on the draft CEPA checklist, that it was not dealt with. And there've been a number of accidents. A lot of people just going off the road because the shoulders are too narrow, but there's also been crashes and so forth. And that really, we don't believe it was looked at very carefully by the applicant or the county.
Well, does that mean that, like with sort of modifications in the plan, widening of roads and so on, so I mean that there's like an alternative that you would approve, or it sounds to me like your effort is actually to stop the development altogether, or am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we understand this. The developer owns his property and he has a right to develop it, but we would much prefer we were looking at 5-acre lots over the entire span of the 200 acres. We think that's the way it should be looked at. On the roads, very expensive to improve these roads, could be millions and millions of dollars. And the question is, who pays for it? The county said, well, to the developer, if you give us an easement over on the golf course side so we can widen the road, that's good enough. But why should the county be paying for this? Which basically means us as citizens in our property taxes, we would be paying for this. We've got a lot of other priorities, higher priorities in this county, rather than widening a rural road to allow a developer to put in more high-end housing.
Well, and you just said some key words. It's my understanding that the rationale for the exceptions where, you know, like denser housing is permitted in return for mitigating open space was to create more affordable housing in the county. And this is all high-end housing, right? This is not really aimed at addressing our affordable housing crisis.
That's absolutely correct. It's not housing diversity in any shape or form. This is going to go to high-end market housing. Probably a lot of folks will be just, you know, temporary or part-time residents of the area. It's going to be on the higher end. There's no doubt about it. And I think a lot of us in the Alliance, we feel like we should be looking at developing higher density areas closer to town, so folks aren't going to need to use public transportation and travel 8 miles to get into town. We also have to think about climate change. You know, that's something that wasn't discussed at all. I raised it in my initial comments. It's unfortunately, we've got an archaic code that doesn't even mention climate change in there. But look at outside today. I mean, it's here. And every single growth management proposal needs to consider the impacts of climate change and carbon capture and some way of dealing with some sort of resiliency within the county. But we're way behind. We're way behind on this issue.
Right. And I gather that the proposal here is actually to put the developments not on the already developed golf course, which will remain intact, but in the remaining wild areas, like surrounding the golf course, right?
Exactly.
In the forested areas.
Right. In the forested area, most of it will go into what's left of the forested areas, and the areas of the wetlands. You know, we're going to have an interesting discussion about the wetlands boundary next week with the experts. But I also want to mention over on the other side with the wetlands. Another issue for us is we don't think the county is looking holistically at what people are trying to do to protect some of our areas here. For example, there's a year-round stream that goes from the Douglas Way area east, a large riparian area that the Jefferson Land Trust bought to protect that riparian area. Well, that riparian area continues on into the golf course, and it's going to be affected by this development. So it doesn't make sense. I mean, this should be a protected area all the way through to the pond where it eventually drains out and then on into Discovery Bay. And so it's another example. We're not looking at the whole picture here, and we need to do that.
Another area that I noticed you mentioned on your website was the wastewater treatment. What is the plan? Is there's not a sewer system planned for the developments, right?
Well, it's not really clear. It looks like that the developer could be allowed to have every individual lot to have their own septic system. The developer has also suggested, but not really put on the table, a plan to do a community sewer system. It's an infrastructure issue. Who's going to pay? Who's going to maintain like a large septic or stormwater system in the area? We just don't really know. It's just not clear at all. It kind of gets to what I've been talking about all along. The county's kind of looking at this in a piecemeal fashion. Instead of looking at holistically everything, including the adjacent lands and what people are trying to do in the overall community, they're just opening this thing up and they'll say, well, we'll deal with stormwater later in another permit. We'll deal with septic later in another permit. We'll deal with impacts of road construction in another permit down the line. And instead of looking at everything in a master plan, I don't know if they still have it, but when I first bought my property in 2008, the Department of Community Development said, why don't you apply for a SPAD, which is a holistic plan on how you're going to develop your 5-acre parcel? And I said, okay, that makes sense. And I applied for it and I got it. But this wasn't the case for this development at all. They didn't have to do anything like that.
So the previous application to develop this land that was rejected several years ago was for twice the number of units. However, one of the criticism of this plan, which is to, build 48 houses, and the previous one was for 96, but it was pointed out that the kind of a loophole, so this seems like it's like the project's been cut in half from the last application. But in fact, all of those lots would have the right to add an ADU, so theoretically it could go up to 96 dwelling units. Ultimately.
That's exactly right, Steve. And that wasn't considered at all in the permit or the analysis that the county did. All they said is, well, you could put 48 houses in there. And there was a comment by the Department of Public Works with respect to the traffic safety issues that there needed to be analysis of the additional traffic with the 48 additional ADUs, but it wasn't done.
So, well, we're about to run out of time here, but I'm wondering if there is, what question I forgot to ask you that you're just like dying to answer. Well, actually, I do have another question of my own,
okay.
Which is I gather that the Alliance is pretty much exclusively composed of neighbors. And therefore, it seems like you would be pretty open to accusations of NIMBYism, saying, well, people would say, well, we have like a real housing crisis in this county, and people, regardless of their income, are having real trouble finding places to live. So how would you respond to somebody who made that accusation?
Well, I completely agree with it. It is a crisis. But this proposal doesn't take us toward solving it. It actually could exacerbate it because it'll bring in more people that are going to need more services, and very likely high-end houses, high-end people. They're not going to be working in the community. So we need instead of say improving the road here, we need to put that money back into areas close to town and develop a diversity of housing in there and have these areas be closer to essential services, which is also a climate change impact. So people aren't running. We don't have masses of people running back and forth 8 or 10 miles. One way is a shot to get the services that they need. And that's the problem with these clustering subdivisions out there that seem to be growing like mushrooms.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time today. And why don't you just repeat once again when and how people can take part in these hearings? The public hearing is on Monday, August 23rd Is that
right? Public hearing is August 23rd. Anybody can Zoom into that. Everything's on Zoom. The information is on our website. Also, it's in the Leader this week. We put an ad in the second page of Leader. All the information's there, and it's also on the county website. So, but anybody can join and listen in this coming week. It starts at 9 o'clock on Zoom, and it's probably going to go 6 or 7 hours every day. And it's going to be, as I would say, meaty, very technical, some of it in nature. But I think it'll be a very interesting discussion before the hearings examiner.
Okay. And that website, again, is what?
dbaa.support.
All right.
Discovery Bay Action Alliance .support. And I want to thank everybody who's been supporting us either through donations or just getting out the word. And we think this is a milestone thing that's happening here. If this thing goes ahead, it's going to be, I think, set a very important precedent against where we need to go in the county with respect to growth.
After our interview, I called Bob Hyneth back to ask what had qualified him to become chair of the Discovery Bay Action Alliance. It turns out that Hyneth is a specialist in salmon biology, and that for the past 3 decades, he has worked with tribal authorities in campaigns for dam removal to save salmon runs, including the successful removal of the dams on the Elwha River in 2011, which has resulted in the resurrection of salmon runs on the river. His familiarity with environmental review on the Elwha and many other sites, he said, was what gave him the confidence to push forward with appealing the county's determination of non-significance for the Discovery Bay Golf Course's development plan. With Discovery Bay Action Alliance Chair Bob Hyneth, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.